Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Tuesday, July 7th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, and news and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as shortstop Connor Griffin is back on the 10-day IL, this time with a torn finger tendon, which he suffered while making an incredible diving play. It's a pretty severe injury for Griffin, which is super unfortunate. He's expected to miss 8 to 10 weeks with this torn finger tendon. So with Connor Griffin out of the Pirates lineup, shortstop Jack Brannigan was recalled from the minors. He's the Pirates' number 22 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. Brannigan is super toolsy, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy and he strikes out too much. So not only will he not be guaranteed an everyday role or even a regular role with the Pirates, but also there are clear deficiencies in his game. To replace Griffin directly, Jared Triolo will take over as the Pirates' everyday shortstop. Next, we have third baseman David Hamilton, who was placed on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. Hamilton's timeline for his return is unclear at the moment, but he wasn't playing a significant role for the Brewers prior to the injury anyway. Outfielder Blake Perkins was also optioned to the minors, as we had two guys removed from the active roster. And to replace them, outfielder Greg Jones was selected from the minors, and outfielder Luis Lara was recalled from the minors. It's a pretty big call-up. He is the Brewers' number 4 prospect and is the number 67 prospect in all of baseball. Lara is a switch hitter, and at AAA, he's batted .321 with 9 homers, 24 steals, a 143 WRC plus, and more walks than strikeouts. So he's clearly incredible. The Brewers signed him to an extension last month. I think it was 7 years. It was not that much money because it was a pre-debut extension, but he looks legit. The only problem is I don't know how Lara gets into the lineup. He's super versatile. He's a switch hitter. He clearly has great plate discipline, power, speed, batting average, etc. But they got Jackson Churio, Garrett Mitchell, and Sal Frelick in the outfield with Christian Yelich at DH. So there's not really a clear path to playing time. Maybe Lara is on the short side of a platoon in center field with Garrett Mitchell, but as a switch hitter, you're not really maximizing what he can do on the field, as he'd just be limited to batting right-handed. So we'll see what the Brewers do. He started in one of their two games of their doubleheader yesterday, but Lara has a ceiling that seems to be as high as just about anyone's. And lastly, outfielder Byron Buxton was placed on the 10-day IL with a hip strain. He was healthy all year, which is not something you can usually say about Buxton, but you're pretty much guaranteed an IL stint at some point. Luckily, it's right before the All-Star break, so maybe some of that IL stint will be diminished by the All-Star break, so he should only miss, I don't know, 7 games or so, and then the All-Star break will allow him to avoid missing any more than that. So let's hope that Buxton is back quickly from his hip strain. To replace Buxton, we'll see some sort of shortstop center field combo platoon for the Twins, with Tristan Gray on the strong side of a shortstop platoon and Ryan Creedler on the strong side of a center field platoon, and then switching over to shortstop against left-handed pitchers while Kyler Fedko takes over in center field versus southpaws. Outfielder Alan Rodon was optioned to the minors, or was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. In terms of transactions, first baseman Jorge Polanco was activated from the 60-day IL after missing nearly 3 months with a wrist contusion and subsequent Achilles bursitis. Polanco will be the Mets' everyday designated hitter moving forward, and shortstop Ronnie Mauricio was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. This is likely to cut into Mark Vientos' playing time the most. Next, starting pitcher Mike Burrows was optioned to the minors after allowing 10 runs in his last start, inflating his ERA on the season to 5.99 through 17 starts. Really not been the breakout season we expected from Burrows after the Astros acquired him via trade from the Pirates in the offseason. Reliever Alimber Santa was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and it looks like Christian Javier is likely to be someone who will shift from the bullpen to the rotation to replace Burrows. So once we see Christian Javier fully stretched out, he should be replacing Mike Burrows in the Astros rotation. Next, starting pitcher Owen Murphy was optioned to the minors. He's the Braves' number six prospect, and he made his MLB debut on Monday and took the loss pitching the 10th. I expect them to use him as a starter the next time he's up, so they're going to let him go back to the minors and pitch as intended as a starting pitcher. Reliever James Karinchak was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Next, shortstop Jake Wilson was active. Jacob Wilson. I definitely am somebody as a fellow Jake who is like, yo, if your name is Jacob, own up to that. My full name is Jake. We got too many Jakes already. Just stick with Jacob, buddy. That's my own fault for stumbling over that one. But shortstop Jacob Wilson was activated from the 10-day IL after missing the minimum time with thumb inflammation. Wilson will take over as the A's everyday shortstop while Alika Williams heads to the bench and catcher Brian Servin is optioned to the minors. In other A's news, starting pitcher Jacob Lopez was recalled from the minors. He is likely to pitch out of the bullpen as the A's currently have a pretty set-in-stone five-man rotation at the moment. Starting pitcher Cade Morris was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, outfielder Yohendrick Pinyongo was optioned to the minors. Yonatan Clase will replace Pinyongo on the strong side of a left-field platoon with Miles Straw for the Blue Jays. And reliever Chad Dallas was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, reliever Brad Keller is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today. He has missed the past about a month with forearm tendonitis. So Brad Keller back to being one of the top setup options in the Phillies bullpen. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had a packed slate of 16 games as we had a doubleheader between the Brewers and the Cardinals. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with DH Kyle Schwarber, who helped the Phillies to win in Cincinnati, going 2-for-4 with a run, a home run, and two runs batted in. Of course, got to mention Schwarber when he extends his MLB leading home run total up to 31 now, as this one traveled 408 feet at 112 miles per hour. So Kyle Schwarber up to 31 homers on the season now. Next, we have first baseman Ryan O'Hearn, who helped the Pirates to win against the Braves, going 4-for-5 with three runs, three home runs, and 10 runs batted in. O'Hearn is up to 16 homers on the year now. The first one went 384 feet at 100 miles per hour. The second one went 415 feet at 105 miles per hour. And the last one went 373 feet at 101 miles per hour. O'Hearn had a career night, becoming the first Pittsburgh Pirate with double-digit runs batted in. This game quickly made 2026 O'Hearn's best offensive campaign. He's now just one home run shy from tying the career high he set last year, and his WRC plus is at a career best. Oddly enough, O'Hearn's Statcast metrics haven't improved at all. They've actually gone the opposite way. He is pulling fly balls more than ever, allowing him to maximize his power, but there isn't much supporting O'Hearn's career best 293 batting average. Of course, you have to keep riding him while he's rocking an 850 OPS, but I wouldn't be surprised if the second half wasn't as enjoyable as the first half was for Ryan O'Hearn, but incredible three home run game on Tuesday. Next, we have outfielder AJ Ewing, who did all he could, but the Mets lost to the Royals. He went 4-for-4 with four runs, a home run, three runs batted in, a walk, and a steal to complete the combo meal. That's six home runs and nine steals on the year now for AJ Ewing. The homer went 402 feet at 105 miles per hour. And every time it looks like Ewing is about to fall off a cliff, he does something special. He's made the correct adjustments to MLB pitching, allowing him to continue thriving beyond his first 50 games. He was striking out a concerning amount early on, fanning at a 32% rate through his first 30 games. But since then, Ewing's been at 17% in the strikeout department, and in concert with an 11% walk rate, he's showcasing a more patient approach that has allowed him to tap into more power as well as being able to maximize his wheels. He's gone deep five times in his last 22 games after doing so just twice in his first 30 games. And while his batted ball metrics aren't spectacular, they're enough in concert with that aforementioned speed and contact ability to make Ewing someone worth rostering universally. And lastly, we've got shortstop Tyler Tolbert, who helped the Royals to win in Queens, going 5-for-6 with four runs, a home run, two runs batted in, and a steal to complete the combo meal. It was his second homer and 10th steal, and the homer went 377 feet at 99 miles per hour. And you must be wondering, if you listened to the podcast yesterday, is this a repeat? Did Jake mess up? No, he did not. We just covered Tolbert yesterday after he went 5-for-5, but he went 5-for-6 here, and he deserves being mentioned again after he tied the record for the most consecutive plate appearances with a hit. Tolbert went 12 straight plate appearances with a hit, tying Walt Dropo's record from 1952. Tolbert didn't really put on a hitting clinic, though, as, yeah, he did belt two home runs, something he rarely does as a guy who doesn't have a lot of pop. But half of those 12 hits were infield singles that he beat out with his elite speed. I went back and I watched all 12 of those plate appearances, and it was just, you know, slow dribblers to the left side that he was able to leg out. He did it five or six times. It was pretty incredible, but not something that you would expect to be sustainable moving forward. Luckily, Tolbert does have incredible speed, which is the only tool I think is worth chasing in fantasy and only in the deepest of leagues, especially because he doesn't have a path to everyday playing time for the Royals. But it was dope to see a pretty much unknown player set such an impressive record. And I wonder how Tolbert will follow this up and if, as a result, he gets to see more playing time. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Jacob Mizorowski, who helped the Brewers to win in St. Louis, tossing seven innings, allowing three hits and three earned runs, walking nobody while fanning 11. He induced 16 whiffs with 29% CSW across 103 pitches. And Mizorowski averaged 101.9 miles per hour with his fastball on Tuesday. I don't think anybody's ever done that before. Nearly 102 miles per hour on average with the four-seam fastball. That's incredible stuff from Mizorowski. He's got the best ERA in MLB at 1.62. His 0.76 whip is the best mark in baseball. He's also got the best batting average against and the most strikeouts at 167 strikeouts. He's also tied for the MLB lead in wins, technically only among starters, as his teammate Aaron Ashby has 12 out of the bullpen. And Mizorowski is also fifth with 111 innings pitched this year. He's clearly been the best pitcher in baseball in 2026. Next, we have Zach Wheeler, who helped the Phillies to win in Cincinnati, tossing seven innings, allowing four hits and one run, walking nobody while fanning 14. He induced 20 whiffs with 37% CSW across 104 pitches, and Wheeler earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 37% CSW on Tuesday. He had a revenge game against the All-Star Game voters. He was snubbed out of the All-Star Game, and as a result, he said, you know what, hold my beer, watch me do something crazy. Wheeler tied his career high with 14 strikeouts on Tuesday as he dominated with four-seamers, sweepers, and splitters. And despite being held out of action for the first month of the season, Wheeler now has nine wins, a 2.28 ERA, a 0.91 whip, and a 29% strikeout rate through 14 starts. Incredible production. If whoever had the gall to take the chance on Wheeler in the draft season, they are definitely paying the dividends now. Next, we have Taj Bradley, who helped the Twins to win against the Guardians, tossing seven innings, allowing three hits and one run, walking nobody while striking out 10. He induced 25 whiffs with 36% CSW across 101 pitches, and Bradley earned the gallows pole by leading baseball with those 25 whiffs. Bradley continued what has been another hot streak driven by improved control. That's a 2.25 ERA, a 0.88 whip, and a 35% strikeout rate across his last four starts. Elite numbers. This one was driven by bonkers dominance from cutters. They induced 17 whiffs and a whopping 64% CSW, which are ridiculous numbers for a single pitch to put up, even especially so as it wasn't even his primary offering. Splitters weren't great in this one with sub 50% strikes, but they still found six whiffs, while forcing kept him competitive all game by earning strikes. And obviously, don't expect Bradley to keep up this pace for the long run. He really doesn't have the control to hold on to this pace forever, but he's a streaky arm that should be rostered when he's on a hot streak. He's on one of the hottest streaks we've seen across baseball this season, and it's time to continue rolling with Taj Bradley while he's pitching well. And lastly, we have Ian Seymour, who helped the Rays to win against the Yankees, tossing five and a third innings, allowing five hits and 300 runs, walking nobody while striking out a dozen batters. He induced 17 whiffs with 36% CSW across 94 pitches. And Seymour has been cooking recently, and he took his game to another level against the mighty Bronx Bombers with a career-high dozen strikeouts. His main trio of pitches cooked. Four-seamers generally landed upstairs for seven whiffs and 43% CSW, leading the way in both categories as changeups led with five strikeouts via five whiffs and 38% CSW. But his feel for the zone with the slow ball hasn't been ideal recently, as they've eclipsed 55% strikes in his last three starts. They have not eclipsed 55% strikes in his last three starts. So not the best control from Seymour on his signature changeup. But the last musketeer is the sweeper, which racked up four whiffs and 39% CSW. And the breaker's development this year has been the biggest factor in his emergence as a starter, giving him a true weapon versus left-handed batters and allowing him to find support when his changeup or four-seamer aren't cooking. Luckily, all three were cooking here, allowing him to strike out 12 batters. We haven't really seen Seymour's weaknesses exposed yet, but for now, we're going to keep sending him out there while he's dominating. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Abner Uribe recorded his sixth save with a hitless ninth. Trevor Megill was unavailable after pitching on back-to-back days and in three of the past four. Trent Thornton pitched a perfect ninth for his second save. Jacob Webb did pitch in that one, recording the final out of the seventh for his sixth hold. It might be just a straight-up closer committee for the Cubs right now with Thornton, Webb, and Caleb Thielbar in there as well. Brian Baker pitched a scoreless ninth for his 24th save. Josh Hader got the final out of the game for his 10th save. Yoan Duran had a scoreless three-strikeout ninth for his 22nd save. Yoendris Gomez got the final out of the game for his 10th save. Mason Miller recorded his NL-leading 23rd save with a perfect ninth. And lastly, Jordan Romano recorded a scoreless ninth for his 6th save. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Louis Varlin pitched a perfect ninth up by six. He hadn't pitched since last Friday, so this might have been a maintenance outing for Louis Varlin. Pete Fairbanks pitched a scoreless ninth in a tie game that the Marlins would win in 10 innings. And lastly, Andrés Muñoz pitched a perfect ninth in a tie game the Mariners would lose in 10 innings. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Wednesday, July 8th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Dylan Cease versus Logan Webb. We got a pair of aces squaring off. Both of these guys have great production, but they get there in very different ways. So it'll be interesting to see these guys square off against each other. You have a ground ball command type arm from Logan Webb. Much a slinger type guy too, who throws more sidearm than over the top. While Dylan Cease is over the top, he's there to overpower you. He's looking for strikeouts. He's going to walk a lot of guys. He might give up some home runs. It's going to be a little bit chaotic, but ultimately he's going to give you some great numbers. So it'll be interesting to watch Cease square off against Logan Webb. In terms of probable starters, we've got seven guys in the auto starts tier, including Cease and Webb. We've also got Chase Burns versus the Phillies, George Kirby in Miami, and Kyle Harrison in St. Louis. Our probably starts tier has nine guys, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Connor Prelip versus the Guardians. He just took down the Rockies with 20 whiffs, and while you can say blame it on the Rockies there, Prelip's slider command looked improved after it had been missing for a while, and curveballs stepped up big time to pair with his four-seamer and slider to give him three offerings to take down batters. And while the Guardians lineup is not that great, that should help Prelip find more success here as well. There's still the little bit of hesitation that, you know, maybe that last start was just fluky because of the Rockies, but I think it's worth taking the chance. Prelip versus the Guardians. I'd also keep an eye out for Jared Jones versus the Braves. His stuff is undeniable, but he's just not been able to execute it this year. Lack of command, lack of control, lack of efficiency from Jared Jones as he's not worked deep into starts, but the Braves lineup struggled massively in June. It was the worst offense in baseball. So hopefully that continues here and Jared Jones is able to eclipse five frames. If you're looking for a pitcher with an opener, I think we'll see Randy Dobnak have an opener for the Royals in New York against the Mets. It's not one that I would target though. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd look at Phillies and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark. It's one of the best hitters parks in baseball. We'll see a bullpen game from the Phillies. There's no announced starter. Fangraphs doesn't have anything either. We could see Alan Rangel called up, but we could also see Andrew Painter recalled. I think Rangel is less likely because he only has one option left. So if he gets called up, he can only get sent back down one more time, whereas Painter has three options. He's looked solid in his two AAA starts. So if he gets called up, he'll square off against Chase Burns in that one. And really, I only like that park. I only like this matchup for hitters because of the park. And I'd also target Tigers hitters versus Jeffrey Springs in Comerica Park because Springs has a 5.79 ERA. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Josh Hader has pitched in three of the past 4 days, and so has Brian King. So if the Astros want to give those two Southpaws the day off, they can turn to Brian Abreu or Steven Okert in the ninth. Next, Jordan Romano has pitched in three of the past 4 days, so if the Rockies want to give him the day off, they will turn to Antonio Senzatella or Jimmy Hergett. And lastly, Mason Miller has pitched in three of the past 4 days, so if the Padres want to give Miller the day off, Adrian Morahone could get a shot at a save for the Padres on Wednesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.